Probably for many Septembers to come, any memory of the twin towers of the World Trade Center will begin in sadness. But they were conceived of as a dream. The dream of a center of world trade came about in the aftermath of World War II, and a quarter of a century later the twin towers dominated the skyline of Manhattan and the imagination of the world. Architectural critic Ada Louise Huxtable didn't care for the design, but she admired their ambition.
There is something that is inside of human beings that wants to reach for the skies. And I'd like to think that it was that romantic and that spiritual and that symbolic.
And of course, as few people will ever forget, the towers were destroyed in just a single morning. Filmmaker Rick Burns has directed a documentary about the World Trade Center. It's called The Center of the World. It's part of the American Experience series on PBS. It is the final episode of New York City, a documentary film. And Rick Burns joins us in our New York studios. Rick, thanks very much for being with us again.
Thanks for having me.
You remind us all over again that these towers were scarcely a universally popular idea, were they?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I think it's arguably the case they were the most reviled buildings in the history of architecture. Nobody intended them to be that way. And so they began in the early 1960s full of all the optimism of President Kennedy's call to go to the moon, and here we were going to build these two towers that were going to go to the moon or something like that. Mm-hmm. By the time they were topping out in the late 60s, early 70s, the world had changed. And that kind of building, that kind of large-scale, top-down building seen as high-handed by so many people.
Arrogant is almost the word you read the most.
Arrogant and a sort of a throwback to a kind of a sort of men, shadowy men in the back room deciding your fate, mm-hmm. which by the end of the 1960s didn't have a lot of appeal to a lot of people. And so by the time they opened, they were essentially a failure in every way they could be. Mm-hmm. They were derided as the standing monument to architectural boredom and the biggest aluminum siding job in the history of the world. They were also a complete economic failure for the first couple decades of their existence. In fact, it's miraculous that they ever went up.
Explain to us all over again, if you could please, how the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey acquired not only this tract of land, but this amazing edifice.
The Port Authority of New York and New Jersey is one of the least known agencies, I think, in New York City. It handles traffic in and out of the Port of New York and has so since the late 19-teens, early 1920s. It was looked to as the only agency powerful enough to undertake such a massive project. It had the power of eminent domain. In other words, it could go in and condemn properties and take them away from people. It also had the know-how. It had expanded every Hudson River crossing. Mm-hmm. It had expanded every airport in the region. It had built the Port Authority bus terminal. It knew how to build big as no construction agency literally in the world. And so it was handed to an extraordinary man, Austin Tobin, the director of the Port Authority. People called him the Irish Robert Moses. He was in many ways more successful than Robert Moses, who had done so much to shape New York in the 20th century. He knew how to get all his political ducks in the row, and he knew how and when to fight battles. He never fought a battle he was going to lose. And therefore, one of the poignant ironies of his career, I think, is that this building, which he saw from the beginning as the jewel in the crown of his career, was both a victory. After all, it was completed. Up went the towers. And yet it was a tremendous Pyrrhic victory, or rather he never lived to see those twin towers outlive all the criticism, architectural, political, and otherwise, that was heaped on them.
He didn't even go to the ribbon-cutting ceremony.
Oh, it's short of 9/11 itself, the saddest moment in the history of the World Trade Center was the opening day in 1973, a dismal, overcast, rainy day, unattended by Mayor John Lindsay, unattended by the guest of honor, the then Secretary of Labor, and unattended by Austin Tobin, who had resigned the year before, really a broken man. And there's a tremendously moving moment to me in the story of the World Trade Center, which we try to evoke in our film, when his faithful lieutenant, Guy Tozzoli, recalls taking Austin Tobin in the late 70s, when Tobin was then near death from cancer, out to the plaza, the Austin Tobin Plaza, where in his wheelchair, Tobin asked to be left alone for 2 hours. As he sat silently surveying the monuments of his career, the great artworks out on the plaza, the towers themselves. And then Guy Tozzoli never saw him again. That was it, that one moment out there on the plaza named after him.
In its history, there came a point when the public began to soften its perception of those twin towers of the World Trade Center. And I want to take some time to talk about what you cite as a signature event a young Frenchman who first saw a picture of the Twin Towers in a magazine, and they spoke to him. And within a few years, in fact, he would be carrying on a dialogue as he walked between them.
On the morning of August 7th, 1974, as Wall Street came awake, Philippe Petit had spent 45 minutes without coming off a one-inch thick braided steel cable, which he had strung between the two towers.
Let's listen to his recollection.
They were alive. Not many people know that. The people who build them know that they were vibrating with the passage of a cloud over the sun, the difference of temperature, the wind. And the skeleton was actually making noise. I discovered that. And at times the tower were asleep, hibernating, and at times they wake up and they cry and they almost yell for help.
It was on the front page of every newspaper around the world. It was a lead item in the nightly news. And suddenly people remembered, you know, we build these things for all sorts of motives, but at the end of the day, we're just trying to get up high.
One of the things I think your film makes clear, by the time 2001 arrives, that building, those twin towers, were virtually as international a community as the United Nations.
Indeed.
So when those towers fell, there were victims from all over the world.
I mean, 80, 90 different countries were represented by those people. It was a kind of United Nations in a lovely, ordinary way. They also, of course, stood for capitalism. Mm-hmm. So the world was there, trade was there, and they were at the center of all that. So they were, it turns out this name, Winthrop Aldrich, David Rockefeller's uncle in 1946, had helped come up with the phrase, the World Trade Center. And I think there were never was there a building more aptly named. People understood in their bones around the world what these buildings stood for, which is why they were loved, why they were known, and alas, also why they were hated by some people.
Within hours, not to say weeks, there was a feeling that something else had to go back there.
Mm.
And yet nobody talked seriously of a 115-story building or something on the same scale. Do we have that scale of aspiration anymore?
I don't think we either will or should build according to the kind of almost adolescent arrogance that pushed those twin towers into the sky. But I think we should build tall. I think we have the will to do so, and I think it's crucial that we do so. Since the towers fell, all the skyline of New York has seemed smaller. Every building seems more slouched down because it's missing the linchpin buildings. So let's not necessarily build exactly the same thing, but build something graceful and tall that reminds people that, irrational though it may seem, that motive to change your station, to get up higher, to become something different than who you are, is something that's knit into us all. So I look forward to the day when there is a tower, a new kind of worldly tower, which is a monument and a symbol and a memorial, and that reinstates the sheer height and exuberance and exhilaration of the city skyline.
Rick, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
Rick Burns, director of the series New York, a documentary film, part of PBS's American Experience. The eighth and final episode of his series, The Center of the World, will air Monday, September 8th. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.